We've never seen a perfect marriage.
But we have seen marriages that are full of laughter and life.
Conflict and misunderstandings.
Growth and hope.
We want to dive into the nuts and bolts of those relationships.
There are no experts here. Just real talk with real couples who really like each other.
This is Marriage Lab with Aaron
and Jenna.
Welcome to Marriage Lab. I'm Aaron, this is Jenna.
You stole my thunder. I am Jenna, that is right.
And we are going to have our friends Doug and Katrina Bryant on in a little bit. And we wanted to, they always throw the most epic birthday parties. And I think we had actually told the story before of at one of their birthday parties, but I want to tell it again.
You know, it's funny. I think I was thinking about it. I was like, they're the perfect superpowers for epic birthday parties because Doug has no limits. Everything's on the table. Like,
goofy,
yeah, let's do
wild,
it.
Fun, loving, and
potentially
all the
like hurting yourself, but it's worth the story. And then Katrina is a super planner, like executes, yeah, preps for weeks. So, like,
but she also values all that stuff.
Yes.
I think because she's married to Doug, she values it.
So it's like all of Doug's ideas and energies get executed in the most like practical. You're like, this is awesome.
Yeah. So their birthday parties are epic. And
I literally don't miss them. No. I mean, I love them, but then I also don't miss them.
You mean you don't miss them when they're gone, or you don't?
I mean, I'll clear my schedule. Oh, okay. Be like, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that, Grandma.
You always show
up. I have to show up. Just kidding. All my grandmas are dead. So
yeah, I was wondering what was
2019. All of my, it was a bad year to be my grandma's.
Yeah, it was
yours
all of
too.
Our grandmas.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Sorry. Enough about dead grandmas. Continue.
So at their birthday party, there was a couple, another couple who they're like, we can do the dirty dancing thing where she runs and he picks her up and, you know, she's looks like she's flying like an eagle or whatever.
Funny fact that when Aaron's told the story before, he's,
I know,
like,
I was gonna leave that part out.
It's like, she's really little, and then but she's a good friend of mine. I was like, babe, she's literally 10 pounds less than I am. But Aaron's my size, so maybe that's why it's perspective.
Yeah. And yeah, and
like,
so
the difference between
she ran and her husband like caught her, picked her up, and everyone's like, yeah, woo. So I'm looking at this, I have a drink in my hand, and I'm thinking, you know, I bet it'd be really funny if Jenna and I tried this, because she would like, we would totally fail 100%. And it would just be really funny. And I think I'm a little tipsy. So I'm like thinking, yeah, we should definitely try this. And I like turn my head to look across the room at Jenna, to maybe like go, hey, we should do this. And she's already sprinting across the room. She's halfway across the room. I can see this look on her face. She's like, ah! And I was like, oh crap. And then she slams into me. We hit the couch. The couch flips backwards. My drink goes flying.
It was truly more like a tackle than
any
jumping.
That was the only thing that happened. There was no,
I think the best part was the
lift.
Oh, true, like huge leather. I tipped over a leather couch.
Yeah. By crashing me into it.
That was worth it.
It was great. It was really funny.
I'm glad you find my antics funny.
I do. I do. And it got a good laugh and it was pretty memorable. And I wasn't actually hurt, which is surprising. If I was actually hurt, it might have changed my perspective. But their most recent birthday party was over in the little park near our house. And it was like relay couple games. So we had a bunch of different couples. And the first one was, we had kayaks on piano dollies. And a couple guys would pull one of the wives on it, like down the street as fast as they could. And
it was so sketchy. One of the wives, because, you know, like it towing it, it like was it wobbling.
Swings back and forth, slides back and forth.
Almost hit a parked boat.
She was going straight for it. And Justin had to run sideways really fast to pull her out of the way. The next one was, we given all this cardboard and tape and said, make some armor. And we're like, what's this for? And they're like, we're not going to tell you. So we armored Jenna up as much as we could, and the other team armored
I was
their person
like,
up.
Because you have to, everyone had to participate. I was like, oh, this sounds like not very risky comparatively. So I was like, I'll do this one. Little
yeah,
did I
and
know.
Then the goal at the end was,
which
to,
we did not know,
the other team gets to shoot Jenna with a paintball gun.
And for the record, I've never done paintball, and I do not, after being shot from that
you
event,
would never play, would
don't
you?
Don't get why boys do it.
Most of it hit your cardboard, but there was like one little gap in the armor or something that made it through.
Okay, so it hit my, it might have been skin. Yeah. Long story short, though, I went to Tahiti 2 or 3 weeks later. I think it was 3 weeks, and I still had
huge bruise.
It was the size of a $0.50 bruise on my. I was like, dang it.
I love paintball because it's terrifying, but also you get to shoot people. Anyways,
it's worth the pain to shoot other people.
Yeah, well, that's what makes it so fun. Is it's so it hurts so bad that you really don't the high, it's such a high risk. It's like playing poker for lots of money. That it makes it fun because you're like, oh man, this it actually changes the game. You know, when you play with airsoft, it hurts a little bit, but not.
I think this must be the difference between boys and girls, because high risk does not motivate me. I'm like, well, my life is high risk. Why would I pretend that toddler might bite me at any moment? I don't know. My life's in Wesley's hands.
And then the last game was jousting, where they taped a big like cush ball to the end of a wrapping paper roll, and then we dipped it in paint, and then we stood on a dolly, and somebody would push the dolly, and two people on dollies are flying towards each other really fast with these paint sticks,
with
swords,
the goals
whatever.
To like tap the other person, have the paint imprinted.
That was pretty fun. That's funny. We had a lot of fun,
and then we went back to our house for was it tacos afterwards?
Yeah, it was super good, and then we played some games, and yeah. Anyways, Doug and Katrina are a blast, but they're also really deep, and that is something that we really appreciate about them, is we actually did a double date this time for this interview.
Yes, because we both have 3 young kids, so we're like, okay, this is...
Sitter share.
Yeah, so we shared a sitter and went out to eat afterwards. Whoop, whoop.
And it was just such a good conversation and super fun and lighthearted, but also deep at the same time.
Fun fact, I really wanted to eat before we recorded the podcast, and Aaron was like, no, because the whole time we're talking, we're going to be like, oh, save it for the podcast. So
yeah, pretty much.
I starved my way through this one.
Just kidding. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
It was terrible. So hard.
So, all right. Well, you want to get into it?
Yeah, let's do this.
All right, we have Doug and Katrina Bryant. Welcome.
Hello.
Woo! Doug and I actually knew each other before Aaron and I did.
Here mm-hmm. it is. This is like my favorite intro to every party friend group.
It's
ever.
True.
Doug is actually my oldest friend here.
Yeah. I do that. I actually usually do like one fact about people because I feel like it's an easy then you can converse if you want to about that. But Doug and I, man, we were babies. You were like 19 or 20, right?
I was 19.
I was like 21, wow. 22. It was mm-hmm. so funny. And then he got married to the lovely Katrina, and I like her a ton. And now like we all obviously have kids, but they carpool. So Doug takes our daughter to school every day for the last 2 years, and I pick up their daughter every day. So there's lots of fun life crossover.
Yeah.
Did you know though that Aaron's known Doug longer than you have?
Huh?
How so? Yes.
Remember I came out to visit here while you were in first year.
Oh.
And I went to Michael Clyde's house.
Oh.
They were living in like the apartment down there.
That was my house.
Yeah, I was like, he lived with Michael Clyde. Yeah.
And then we did the like the hot seat where like someone sits in the middle and everyone speaks good word, prays over them. Yeah.
Encourages them.
Totally. Okay. I would like to clarify, you met Aaron before.
I met Aaron.
We were friends.
Yeah.
Yes, you were friends first.
What I remember first though was playing Ultimate Frisbee with you and just going like, I don't like this guy. He is too Ooh. Good at this.
Oh, okay. I was like, geez. The nine came in with some truth.
It was just because I'm like, God dang it, quit catching those.
Yeah. You're so tall and fast.
Yeah. That was essentially it.
Doug and I lived in a duplex side by side from each other, and we took boards down so that the guys in there could come over to ours whenever they wanted. And then when we needed alone time, we'd just put signs on the door and be like, no tonight. You can't come over.
No tonight. Oh, that's the same sign you put on the door for me.
Yeah, I was like, it carries forward.
Well, thanks for joining us. We wanted you guys on because we like how you guys like each other. Mm-hmm. And you guys are, you have stuff that you're working through, just like the rest of us. But you do that really well, because we all know people that don't do, like, work through hard stuff well. So,
right. Actually, I think it's kind of a cool backstory that when we invited you to be on the podcast, you were hesitant because you were like, oh, we're still working through things. What was it that you said? How would you explain your objection, Katrina?
How would I explain my objection? I think it was more along the lines of we haven't landed. So
there's no resolution.
I think if you're going to get up in front of people and tell your life story, you want to have a landing place. And I don't think that we've fully landed. I think we will. And I'm not worried about that. But we're still figuring out where we're going to land and how we're going to land and how to make.
And so this is like with a specific issue or a number of issues or.
I think we've been married 10 years now. November 11th was our anniversary. Oh, so wow. I think once you hit a certain amount of time, you just start realizing like, oh, I thought this would look a little different. I thought we would be at a different place. And the stuff that's been happening over the years is still happening. And I'm not okay with that happening for the next 10 years. So I would say probably about a year ago, I just kind of like put my foot down and was like, I can't. We need to work on these things. Not like I can't do this with you. We weren't on a place of like divorce or even separation. It was just like, I don't want our marriage to look like this in another 10 years. Like this isn't fun for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
How did you receive that when she brought that up?
Like we were saying earlier, I respond very similarly as Jenna does, where she's like, it was more so like, hey, this hasn't been fun. It was more like, I'm in a lot of pain. And yeah, most of it is because of you. I'm hurting a lot. And I'm like, okay. I don't know what to say. Because like my response typically is to like just freeze up. And then my mind goes blank. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. And she's like, so what are you going to do? I'm like, I'm just really sorry. And I'll do better. I promise.
And then, I think that was our cycle was like, I would get really big. I would get really angry and push into him and into the pain. And he would freeze and run away from me. And then I would push harder and he would freeze and run away from me. And it never felt like he would engage with me. And I also was very scary to engage with.
To a degree. Yeah.
I was going to say, I mean, not doubting that because I'm obviously not in your marriage, but I've never seen you get big or intense.
Oh, you should. You just like
a fly
little
on the
fly
wall.
On the wall when we fight. No.
Yeah.
I think I felt like I had to get like the more pain I was in, the more intense I was feeling. And I felt like if I just get bigger, he'll realize. If I just get bigger,
is
he'll realize.
Is it like you weren't feeling heard?
Yeah. And I wasn't feeling seen in my pain. Yeah. Like,
and I had my own issue where I wouldn't respond until it felt huge.
Oh, okay.
So until it felt like this is a big deal, like we talk about how Katrina is really good at keeping short accounts with people. So, hey, the way you did that the other day, that didn't feel good. Oh, hey, I'm sorry. Let's continue on with life. I would be like, okay. And then just keep going and not really change anything. And I wouldn't really be motivated to change until her pain was really high and it was affecting me. So now like we're not connected and she feels really distant or she feels really standoffish. And I'm like, okay, now I'm feeling disconnected, so we got to fix this. But my tolerance for disconnection was way higher. And she has a really low tolerance for disconnection. And so, like, to me, I'm like, oh, we're in the same house. We're not, like, no one's trying to leave the other person. And, like, we're doing okay. Like,
pretty low standards.
Very, very low. Very low. And so it was like, I'd have to wait for her. One of our big things we've been working through is trying to figure out like, when will Doug realize that there's disconnect? Cause I just don't even sense it in myself. And so that's been some big breakthroughs we've been having in the last 6-8 months is like, I would come to her and be like, I feel like I miss you. And she's like, what? You feel that? Like,
surprising.
Yeah, a little bit. Like it's something there. I'm trying to make space for it. So
that's good.
Yeah.
That we actually super similar. Jenna would be like,
but I'm Katrina in this for once. Yes. So Doug and I are very similar. So I feel like
Doug and Jenna are like the same person. In
we
so
tease
many
that
ways.
Sometimes yeah. Katrina asks me something so that she could be like, how does Doug think?
That's very true. Me and Doug had lunch the other day and I literally asked him, I'm like, okay, so when this happens, what are you thinking and how should I respond to that?
It's just a good
It's eerily similar.
For interrupting you though.
Yeah, I was just gonna say the same. Jenna would always notice when we're disconnected and I'd be like, I thought it was fine. I don't feel like there's a big deal. And that's starting to shift for us where I'm like, I feel really sad. It's when I notice, and I think I said this on a previous podcast, but I would really notice it when after sex, I would feel sad. And I'm like, dang it, I just had an orgasm. Like, I should be like doing great right now. And yet I'm really sad. And I'm like, oh, this is disconnection. Yep. When I feel it, because usually I'm going into sex feeling sad, but I'm really hoping it'll change it.
Right.
And it just doesn't. I mean, it feels good momentarily, and then I'm right back to where I was.
Totally.
I do have a question. You said that, what was it, that we hadn't landed yet. And I was curious, in your perception of other people's marriage, do you feel like everybody else has landed?
No.
Okay. So you had a higher standard.
I think in communicating, maybe I have a higher standard for people that are giving advice.
Okay.
And I don't think that we're sitting here giving advice.
Sure. Yeah.
Don't take this as advice. This is a story. But like communicating your story, communicating like what's happening in your life, like having a resolution at the end always feels really good, and being able to share with people. But this is how we figured it out. But we're actually still figuring it out. And we're doing better for sure. I've actually have a lot of hope about us figuring it out. And I would say a year ago, I don't know that I had a ton of hope. Not again, I wasn't at a place of like, I want to leave him or anything, but I was like, I don't know if he will change.
Yeah.
Because it's been 10 years and I haven't seen him change. And I will say over the last 10 months, he has significantly changed behaviors and patterns and dived into things I never thought he would. So wow. I feel so much more hopeful.
What are you doing?
How dare you? Talking. She asked a question.
I'm just kidding. Terrible.
So this never happens. I'm the one that gets that face all the time when I interrupt. It's wonderful.
So, Doug, what have you done in the last 10 months that's been so different?
So, obviously, big pain, big motivator for me. Yeah. I'm like, she's got huge pain. And I'm like, all right, we got to do something different. So I started seeing a counselor, and I've off and on through our marriage, I've gone to various counselors, but just for like 2-3 months at a time, something like that, like to work on a specific issue that had come up. I'm like, hey, I got to work through this. And now I'm at the point where I think it was William Paul Young. I was listening to a podcast with him, and he talked about like when he finally got to the point when he was going to start addressing the deep issues in his heart, he told his counselor, like, I'm going to meet with you until you tell me I'm okay. Because especially with my personality, I don't know if you're the same, Jenna, but it's easy to be like, you get a little bit of breakthrough. You're like, we're good now. Cool.
Yeah.
Great. Like, and Katrina would get so frustrated by that. Of like, I would go to counseling for 2 months, like every other week, and be like, wow, I had this major revelation, realized this pain is all because of this thing that happened when I was a kid, blah, blah, blah. And I don't need to go anymore. Like, we're good now. And I don't need to even like process it any further. Like, we don't need to journal about it. We don't need to take any more attentional time. This was good enough. And I'm happy with where I'm at now. Cause to me, honestly, it feels like a huge step. I'm
sure.
Like, wow, that was exhaustive and like felt like I can see the world totally differently. So I'm like, so why do I need to keep paying $80 a week to do more of this? I'll just wait until another thing comes up. But this time I was kind of in the place where I'm like, I need to, there's obviously in the last 10 years, the same pattern has emerged where like she gets hurt and I fix myself for a couple months. And then we slowly bleed back into disconnect until she has a lot of pain. And then I change for a few months and then we bleed back. And I'm like, I just can't keep going through this cycle. And so for the last 6-8 months, I've been meeting with a counselor weekly, and just kind of working through tons of various things, but realizing obviously that most of the problems in our marriage are because of my own internal issues. So, finding out more things like that I've for the longest time have seen the world and even myself in a black and white perspective. So specifically with individuals. So everyone, I'm making snap judgments all the time of you are either good or bad, and there is no gray area. And so there's tons of disappointment when I put someone in the good category, and then as all human beings are flawed, I find one of those flaws and I'm like, oh, now you're bad. Now you're bad. Now you're bad. And I basically just this growing distrust of almost everybody, which was enlightening to say the least. But then even more enlightening was to see how I was portraying Katrina, because for Katrina, I was like, I keep seeing everyone that I'm putting into these good categories moving into bad categories. And I'm like, there has to be one person who can be good, because if there's not, I'm probably going to just have a complete internal meltdown. And so I would put Katrina on this pedestal. And even if she was bringing issues to the table, I just was like, I would spin it. So she's totally fine. She's good. They're like, and I have a friend like, hey, the way she confronted you about that when we were over the other night, like that was, didn't seem super kind. And I was like, yeah, but I caused that. And this and that. And I would disqualify everything bad about her because I'm like, I need her to be good. If she's not good, there's no hope for my world. And then learning for myself that I've usually put myself in the bad category. So, and there was just never grace for a gray area to try to be a individual who is good and bad or who has good things and does bad things and fixes stuff. So,
wow.
That's been one of the major things I've been working on. And
because I feel like you just saved me 10 months of counseling.
Listen up. Like, this is advice.
God. Still go.
But the difference is I don't think he's intrinsically good. So, you know.
He's not on a pedestal.
We're solid.
I stand on him.
But I will say it's easy for me, for Doug to go, well, this is all the issues that I had. But him making me intrinsically good would never recognize like, oh, she's in a lot of pain. It has to all be because of me. But what I wasn't doing was going and working on all the pain I had from my childhood. And so just like keep taking out all of my pain, which he triggered and definitely played a role in, but I just kept pushing that all onto him and expecting him to fix it instead of going back and going, I actually have my own set of pain that's not involved with him.
Yeah. You push the button, but it's there from something else.
It's there from something else. And the last 10 years have definitely multiplied it, but it's there from something else. You can't actually come in and solve that and help me figure that out. And no amount of him doing his own counseling is going to make me feel any better.
Wow. Are you going to counseling?
I'm going to counseling also. So we've both been doing counseling.
They just high fives. Doug
is which I tried to high five, and my wife got nervous about just making a sound.
I don't know. Sorry. Yeah, I've been going to counseling, and he's been going to counseling, so it's just.
And then we're also doing marriage counseling, so individual and together.
Okay, I'm just giggling at how many people we've had on our podcast. We're pretty much just an advertisement for counseling.
It's true.
It is the best thing ever.
Oh, it really is.
I mean, it's cliche now. It feels like cliche now, but we always talk about how like, well, my parents' generation, that wasn't a thing. And if you were going to therapy, it was because you had like head trauma, like something's wrong with you.
Yeah.
And just realizing like, it's one of those things where they say like, the best thing you can invest in is yourself.
Yeah.
And so why not cancel Netflix and skim down on your coffees, all the whatever the gimmicky thing is that you can say, but like cut your expenses and build it around going to counseling. Mm-hmm. Make sure you are improving yourself. Probably one of the best men that I know, he was single for a really long time, working really hard. I worked with him. He's working really hard, and he would devote a huge chunk of his salary just to go to counseling every week. And he's like, I know I've got stuff going on. And he's like, I don't want to take that into marriage. I don't want to take that stuff. I don't even just want to have that with myself. I don't want to have to continue to exist with this brokenness inside me. And then he found so much value in it that he started paying for his other family members' counseling. So it was like way of like charitable giving was like, I'm going to make sure my family members have access to this as well. But yeah, it's an advertisement for counseling for sure.
I think that's one of the things is like how often there's obviously conflict in marriage, but people just look at it as your spouse caused it, where so many times it's a root of pain in your own that they don't dig into. And it's like, there's never resolution because
they can never fix it.
Yeah. If you don't actually realize the source isn't your spouse, then it's not going to get solved. That felt really smart.
Yeah.
Well, that was like, it was about 2 or 3 months ago. Do you want to say something?
No, you're good.
About 2 or 3 months ago, we would get into these moments where she would tell me what she needed. And I just was like, I feel like I'm saying exactly what you've told me to say. I'm showing up. I think how you're telling me to show up, but I've just never seen this modeled. I don't know what's going on. And then it was when I finally figured out that like, oh, Katrina can also
own some of it.
Yeah. She can have some problems also. like it's hard to be the bigger person in the room to do all this when you think that you're the problem. Every single time.
But I think you also connected to compassion for me, because if I'm on a pedestal and I don't do anything wrong, then you don't have compassion for me necessarily in my pain.
Well, I don't even think you need anything.
Like,
you're perfect. Katrina's perfect and fine. I'm the person that needs to fix it.
But I'm saying if I show up messy, you can have compassion because you're like, oh, you're showing up messy because you're in pain.
Right.
Instead of like, you're showing up messy because of me. So I'm going to shame spiral and I'm going to make it about myself and all the things that happened.
But it was actually a friend of ours was sitting down on the couch and he said the same thing again, where he was like, He's like, you realize Katrina's not perfect, right? And I was like, logically, I can understand that. But in my heart, I know I don't believe that that's true. I'm like, no, she has to be. And that's when I started recognizing, like, she has to be good and perfect. If something's wrong, then something's bad in our marriage or something. But it was that night. He said that again. And it wasn't anything major. He just reminded me of it. And then that night we got in a big fight and she came at me real hard. And instead of like shame spiraling and taking it all myself, I was just saying in my head, I'm like, she's not a perfect human being. She has problems also. She's not a perfect human being. She also has problems. She can bring things to the table. And then I looked at her again. Like I had to close my eyes and like breathe and say that a few times. And then I looked at her again. And instead of seeing like this perfect person who was just telling me, not in a bad way, but like telling me, like, you're hurting me again, I just saw a hurt little girl who was struggling and trying to like, hear me, please. Yeah. I'm hurting and someone needs to take care of me. And I always have to take care of myself and you're not showing up. And I finally saw it and I was like, oh, and I like went over and I just started speaking to that little girl. I'm like, hey, I can see that you're scared. And it was interesting. Like it was just this dynamically different response. And the response from her was like, all of a sudden she became really soft and just, even though there was pain there and maybe not the most perfect way of bringing it to the table, all of a sudden she felt like she had permission to just, I guess, have that pain.
Be raw
and not feel scared that I wouldn't be able to handle it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can handle it. Oh my gosh, I can do this.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really hard not to like get super excited while it was happening or after it calmed down.
I told him because he was so happy. Like once we kind of like settled and we were connected, he's like getting giddy over how excited he was about doing it well. I was like, hey, I'm going to celebrate you so good tomorrow. If you need someone to celebrate you right now, you should go call because I'm still like raw and tender.
Oh, that's good.
And but yeah, go call someone and celebrate with them. But that's not the space I'm in right now.
But
that's
very self-aware. It was crazy. I wanted to like jump around and dance. I was like, this is amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
You guys said something that I totally relate with, that when you couldn't hear her pain because you were doing what it meant about you,
right?
It turned it about you instead of her, and there was no space for her pain because of your shame spiral. That I totally do that with Aaron. Like it's hard for me to just be like, he's like, hey, hey, hey. Like I almost like close, like fall off, and then he's by himself with his pain because I'm thinking of the implications of how much I suck. And so,
well, usually what your default is to go into fix it mode. Like, okay, so what do you need? What can I do? What do I say?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, hold on. First, I just need you to, I think what I realized after our recent like 3-hour conversation where we went into all this is I was like thinking about, I'm like, what did I actually need? Because I was trying to think, there's probably stuff that even if she did this perfectly, I wouldn't be able to receive it, similar to what you were saying. But I did realize, oh, I think I want her to just say back to me what she heard me say so that I know like, oh yeah, she gets it. Mm-hmm. And so that I think you a couple days later, I was like, hey, can you just tell me what you just heard me say? And yeah, I don't know. It wasn't some big cathartic moment, but I was like, I think I need that more often than like, okay, what can I do?
It's so hard for me. I think it's how I attack my own problems. So I'm not trying, like, in my brain, I'm okay with you having pain. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need you to be perfect or have pain. But I think I want to help alleviate your pain, if that makes sense. So I'm not, like,
it comes from a good place, for sure.
Yeah. But I still,
I always felt, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
I literally have to be like, I like keep my mouth. Sometimes I hold my lips shut.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Or like sit on my hands or do something. Be like, or sometimes they're normally nicely, but remember, you're not talking right now. Like, what were you going to say?
I think what you're saying about like the shame spiral for me, I'm like, I don't like when he shame spirals because that's not my intention, is to tell you that you're bad or that you're like not good at something. It's to like help you do this better. And so when he shame spirals, I would go into like consoling him. And so I'm presenting pain, he shame spirals, and then I'm about like, no, that's not who you are. I'm not saying that. Like, I love you. You're a good man. You're great at this. You're da-da-da. And it would just all become about Doug. And so he had to like, he actually has to manage a shame spiral, and I have to manage, like, I think I've got to the place where I was like, if you're going to go do that, you can go do it somewhere else. I'm not about it anymore.
Totally. Well, that's probably one of the bigger things I worked through in counseling is realizing that the voice of shame inside of my head is super loud and tied to almost everything. So like, if I'm going to do something well, if I'm going to do anything, there's usually a motivation of shame behind it. Mm. And like untangling that web has been, oh my gosh, so crazy when you realize like how deeply entwined it is to almost every motivator, every protector, everything is like, you should do this or you'll be bad. Mm. Or if you're doing it, you're doing it wrong again. Dang it, I'm doing it wrong again. Like it was just always this motivation of like, I have to stop feeling bad, not I'm capable of doing anything good.
Yeah.
It's a tough one to break out of that one, but
I realized my go-to joke is I'm the worst. And I was like, oh, it's because I believe it. Like, especially my seven fun.
That's so sad.
So if anyone says you're fun or you have like, you're doing so many trips, I'm like, no, I'm the worst. And I'm like, oh, cause I actually feel ashamed of how much fun I'm having. Cause what I'm hearing them is like, it's irresponsible. You're irresponsible.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
You're not irresponsible.
That's definitely
true. You're
going to
make me cry.
I was telling Aaron yesterday, he was like, you and Jenna, we were talking about our similarities again. And he's like, are you as spontaneous as Jenna is? And I'm like, it's interesting. I think Jenna is even more able to do more fun things than I do because I'm not a planner. Like,
I'm like,
dude, let's go to Mexico. And we were trying to plan a trip to Mexico. And I was like, okay, let's find a hotel. And I'm like, how about that one? And she's like, well, what about this and this and this and this and this? And I'm like, I'm tired now.
It's so true.
That's so funny.
If we go anywhere, I have to plan it. He's not about it.
I was like, if there's ever like,
one
Jenna and I love fun, but Jenna's the one that will plan the fun and make sure the fun happens. Mm-hmm. And I'm more of a like spontaneous fun guy. I'll be there and make some fun in the moment. But someone make a space for me.
You guys have the best birthday parties, for the record.
Oh, they have the best. So and that is true.
I never miss your birthday parties because they're so, I mean, I love you guys too. They're epic. They're so epic.
They're very fun to plan. I love planning birthday parties. If I could make a job out of it, I would. But I don't know.
I think that's called a party planner.
No. It's totally different, though. I agree. It's not the same.
It's not decor.
I'm not doing decor. I just want to create like a really unique experience, an event for a person.
We could do it. Anyways. Okay. But I actually was curious what you've unpacked in the last year of counseling. So we heard Doug's. What are some of the things you've realized?
Sure. I'm an 8, so this is harder. But also, that's what I've been unpacking is we were talking about this last night. Have you guys ever heard the Sleeping at Last podcast for the Enneagrams?
Yeah, he does the song for each of the
song
numbers.
For each of them. And that song makes me weep every time I hear it. It's so good. If you're an 8, just go listen to it. You'll cry like a baby.
Which is rare. Just kidding.
So rare. I think it's more of I've been protecting myself for a really long time. Mm-hmm. Just my childhood had a lot of transition and some trauma and different things. And so there's a line in the song that's like, I picked the armor up and suddenly it fit. And like the second he said that, that's when I start crying. Cause I'm like, oh yeah, I can remember the moment when I was 8 years old and picked my armor up and protected myself. And so I think in marriage, I wanted to feel like I didn't have to protect myself. And it's not Doug's fault that at 8 years old, I had to protect myself. And so I've been going back and kind of unrooting, like, why do I feel scared in relationship? Why do I feel like I have to control? Like I have anxious attachment and that's like a level of control. So if we're disconnected, even if I'm mad the next day, I'm like, oh, but I want you close. Like I want to feel like I haven't lost you and you're still here because I'm afraid that he wouldn't be. So that's kind of what I've been unpacking is what caused me to pick armor up as a kid, protect myself and kind of just bringing, I mean, we've talked about like we're religious and bringing the Lord into that process too. And talking to the little girl, like she's safe. You don't have to protect yourself anymore. All of that super fun stuff. That's so hard for me to do.
Isn't it interesting how control is so like protection and like,
and it looks pretty.
Yeah. I mean, cause you are the meal prepping queen, groceries, like your house is always clean. Like you have I was like, oh, you have control down. Now I can like see it's a two-sided coin where it benefits you. It's like a pretty dysfunction where it benefits you so well, but like maybe the root of what motivates you is the dysfunctional part.
And I've said that to Doug before. I'm like, he'll maybe get down on himself about like, well, you're not doing this. I'm like, that's because my dysfunctions are prettier than yours. Like, they're still dysfunctions. They just look better on the outside. Because I can compartmentalize really well. I can like change directions. I can manage my emotions and not shame spiral.
You can also figure things out quickly.
Yeah.
And like, and then implement it. Like,
I think I do have a high value for self-awareness and have always had that. And so when something comes up, I can quickly get to a place. I can quickly get a place of like, oh, that's happening because of this and this and this, but I'm doing it logically instead of actually connecting to my heart in it. And so that's also in the last year being like, oh, I have a lot of like information and knowledge, but I wouldn't say that my head and my heart were fully connected and connecting. So I could easily go, well, I'm reacting to you this way because this is what happened whenever I was 10. And then I would walk away from it instead of like, oh, when I was 10, I was really upset about that, and like sit in it and be in it and feel it so that the next time it happens, it wouldn't be such a trigger for me.
And then, well, I think the big thing for me, it was always hard. She would say, I don't want to feel like I have to be the biggest person in the room.
I've heard a friend who's an 8 say the same thing.
I hate that feeling.
Yes. Wow.
Well,
but all, it's not that you hate the feeling.
I don't hate the feeling.
I'm never allowed to be small.
I'm never allowed to be small. I don't actually hate the feeling. I appreciate being able to bring like security and comfort to people, but never feeling like I can put my guard down. That's not fun.
Yeah. And so that was the biggest struggle for me, is trying to figure like, how do I show up and be big? And then what that unlocked for me is I'm like, oh, I actually don't even think that I'm my big thing. Another thing I was learning is that I don't feel like an adult. I feel like a kid. For the most part. And
I can relate to that.
So true.
She's like, I need you to be big. Kids. And whenever she would say like, I don't want to have to be the biggest person in the room. I need you to get big. And I was like, I feel like I instantly revert back to like, I'm 13 years old. My parents are getting divorced. And I'm just trying to figure out like, everyone's saying like, you got to be the man of the house now. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. And like, she'd say, I need you to be big. And in my head, I was like, I don't know what to do. And like, that's all I could hear is like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And then shame spiral. But then it was funny though, because her anxious attachment though, so she'd tell me all this pain that was happening and I would go, okay, what can I do? And I'd be like, I'll try to fix anything, and I'm shame spiraling or whatever. And then the next day she'd be like, okay, like pull close, which would totally hamstring me. I'm like, so we're okay now?
Hamstring.
That's a phrase.
Oh, yeah. I have not. No,
it's in like, battle. When you're in battle fighting with swords, you cut someone's hamstring so that they can't get back up.
Oh, I got real gruff.
Essentially, you're screwed.
Yeah, okay. I listen to fantasy novels.
So it hamstring you.
So it would take my feet out from under me, for a better analogy, because I would never feel the motivation to like keep going. Because
you're like, we're good now.
We're good. Like, I did some stuff last night, and now we're getting closer again. Okay, so I think I'm on the right track.
The motivation, or you would be like punishing yourself and be like, I can't do that. And then that would hurt me more.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, can you come hold me? And you'd be like, I can't do that right now. I need to go do this. I'm like, but I'm bringing you close.
I know. It's so confusing.
It is.
Especially so when you live in a black and white world. I'm like, she's telling me you're causing me so much pain, which in my head means like, I'm bad. And then 30 minutes later, she's like, can you just come hold me? And I'm like, are you like that dumb girl who just keeps inviting the abusive boyfriend back into her world? I'm like, I'm hurting you and I haven't figured it out, and you want me to be close again? I'm just going to hurt you again.
Wow.
Ah! And I'm like, but I'm coming down on me.
Yeah, we had a great cycle, guys. It was so fun.
Oh, gosh.
The fact that you guys, I mean, are so self-aware. I feel like you're ages ahead of where you gave yourself credit for when we initially asked you to be on the podcast. Sure. You're like, I don't know. I'm like, maybe you haven't, like, what do you call it? Maybe you're not pain-free yet, but I was like identifying it and then like slowly rectifying it. I'm like, you're well on your way.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah.
I also, it's interesting. I noticed y'all are some of the most affectionate couples, like all the time.
We're touchy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cute. It feels like you're newlyweds with 3 kids in tow.
It's true. We're both physical touch. I'm quality time, physical touch, and he is physical touch, quality time.
So. Oh, well, that works. That's cheating.
That's cheating.
Yes. So nice, guys.
When your gifts and words of affirmation is number 1 and 2, and then, I mean, those are like the bottom of your list, right? Bottom of the barrel.
I don't think they're on.
He doesn't even own them.
I only have 3 love languages. Yeah. Actually, 1, physical touch.
Yeah. Quality time, 2.
quality time and touch. Yeah.
Yeah.
With your ADHD wife. He's like, oh, we were doing that, huh? And he's like, yeah, you're doing laundry now. Not sitting on the couch with me watching the movie. I'm like, I forgot.
One thing that you said, Katrina, it came up in counseling for me recently. And I think, Doug, you and I see the same person, right?
Yeah, we do. He's great.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to talk about him?
Yeah,
he's already full, though. People ask me.
Andrew Leem. Andrew Leem.
Shout out.
Wait, and you don't see him.
Get on the wait list.
I don't.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. So anyway, what you had said about like logically, I understand how I can connect these emotions together. I'm like, oh, I can see why that makes sense. But especially for this memory that I had of this experience, but allowing yourself to get in the weeds of that and feel it. He recently, as we were like diving into a memory, he's like, I want you to talk about what you're experiencing, but don't assign meaning to it. And I was like, well, what do you mean? He said, okay, you're going to share the feeling, but I just want you to feel it. I don't want you to go, that makes sense why I would feel this, or I felt this because, and don't attach any logic to it. Cause he's like, you are definitely grounding yourself in logic, which is good. It's an adaptive thing, but it won't allow you to be in that moment and actually receive the comfort after you've felt the death, if you will, the pain and despair of that moment. And so I was like, okay. So I tried, I turned it off, and it was like immediately the most hopeless I had ever felt in my life. Being in that, like, oh, this will never change. I'm going to be here forever, and this is going to hurt forever. Because it was the first, like, I actually took my brain out of it and just let myself feel. It was terrifying. Mm-hmm. But I had heard these people from the Allender Center, they do a lot of inner healing work, and they talk about through stories. It's, you have to enter the death of Jesus on Friday, and they draw it like a U. And so you're at the top and you dip down into Saturday, which was the most despair and hopeless that any of the disciples or any followers of Jesus felt, because nobody actually thought he was going to rise from the dead.
Right.
So, U goes back up to Sunday when he resurrects. And they said that most people want to go straight from Friday's death, and they want to draw a dotted line across the top and just go right to the resurrection. But you actually need to dip down into the despair of that in order to fully feel and experience what you were unable to as a child, when your brain kind of disconnected from the left and right side and top and bottom, fully feel it so that you can experience the real miracle of the resurrection, which is I'm not just bringing you out of this moment of death, but I'm bringing you out of hopelessness and despair. Yeah. And so it was super painful and super scary, but it was, I mean, a really necessary part to fully forgiving the person who had hurt me in that moment, fully feeling that. Cause, and I think I'd heard Jason say this one time as well, you can't fully forgive somebody unless you feel the pain of what you're forgiving. And so, and that's also terrifying to do. So anyways, it just made me think of that.
It's really a big deal.
One of the most impactful things, in this last season for me that I was trying to remember is that when it's actually in that Enneagram song, Sleeping at Last does the Enneagram songs, and then they do a breakdown of the song and all the stuff that goes into it. And the guy who helps explain it, he brings up this poem by Khalil Gibran called The Prophet, and he's talking about joy and sorrow. And as a seven, it's really easy to just be like, happy, 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 all the time, happy. What's that, bad? That's pain? No. Happy. We're happy now.
My seven-year-old literally be like, Mom, you're not okay when I'm sad. I don't feel happy like a robot all the time like you. And I'm like, ouch. Okay.
Wow. Dude, how emotionally intelligent is that person?
too high for me.
I notice it with my daughter. I actually see that she's a lot like me, and it makes me sad when I'm like realizing I'm telling her to stop feeling. Like when her emotions get really big, or if she's like freaking out, I'm like, stop it. Because I'm so scared. I'm so scared of like her pain. And I'm like, stop, just stop. And she's like, okay. And she can do it. Like, she can shut it down. Roar cannot shut it down. And I try to get him to stop, and he's like,
but also you're figuring out how to
I'm figuring that out.
Children.
So, but anyways, there's this really beautiful poem where he's talking about this prophet has like gone to visit this town. And as he's leaving the town, everyone thinks he's great, but this woman asks him, she says, tell us about joy and sorrow. Like, what's the greater? Is it joy or sorrow? And he says, your joy is actually your sorrow unmasked. From the self-same well, which your laughter rises, was often filled with your tears. And how else can it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. It is not the cup that holds your wine, the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven. Is not the lute that soothes your spirit, the very wood that was hollowed out with knives. When you are joyous, look deep into your heart, and you shall find it is only that which has given you sorrow that is giving you joy.
Wow.
And he's like, you say, some of you say joy is greater than sorrow, and others say, no, sorrow is the greater. But I say unto you, they are inseparable. Together they come, and when one sits alone with you at your board, remember that another, that the other is asleep upon your bed. And verily you are suspended like scales between your joy and your sorrow. Only when you are empty are you at standstill and balanced. When the treasure keeper lifts you to weigh his gold and his silver, needs must your joy or your sorrow rise or fall. What is this whole idea like? Being able to experience deep sorrow creates a well for even greater joy to be experienced, because you can't understand true joy without understanding the loss of it as well. And so if you just say like, I'm happy all the time, avoid sorrow, avoid pain, any of that stuff, you're never actually going to understand what those greater levels of joy and happiness can feel like. So, and so that's been huge for me as I'm trying to like, Andrew's trying to push me into like, hey, feel that feeling. Because you and actually, we have similarities. Yeah. Sevens and nines both avoid pain. You avoid generally all pain, and I just avoid any internal pain. I'm like, I'm cool with everyone else's pain. Don't talk to me about mine though. And so just trying to like get out of your head and sit in that feeling is hard. But trying to remember like, this is okay. This is actually, this is enabling more things to happen has been really helpful for me.
So good. What originally attracted you to each other, and what would you say is different about your attraction to each other now?
This is always my favorite story. Our initial meeting, we were in the same world in that we both did this ministry school here in Reading and never met each other. And it was during a summer when everyone leaves for the summer that we happened to get connected just before the summer started. And we were at a friend's house. We're playing a game. And I had brought over this really fun board game. Was it
Quelf?
No.
Oh, I was like, oh gosh.
It was called Rat Race.
That would be much more fun.
And if you're familiar with Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it's supposed to teach you financial tools for success.
It's the worst game ever.
But I was in love with it. I was like, this is so amazing. And I was trying to explain it to her. It's a semi-complex game.
And it takes so long to explain.
Oh, those are the worst kind of games.
So I was trying to explain the rules to her. I'm like, it's good. Like, for me, I love big complex games, but you have to understand the rules and then you have a lot of fun.
I don't mind complex games. I do think they're fun. I don't like when rules are read for 2 hours. That is not fun.
It was more like 40 minutes.
Oh, God.
It's so long.
I think I just threw up in my mouth.
It's so interesting because it's the opposite of our personalities. Totally. Like, I'm the rule follower in our relationship, and he's the one who's like, let's have fun. But when it comes to board games, we flip so fast.
When it comes to any kind of game, if it's a game and it's competitive, I want to make sure that we're all on the same page and you're not going to sneak one by me and be like, you didn't tell me that was a rule.
Yeah.
Well, it is. And now I look like a jerk because I'm trying to tell you that the rule doesn't apply when you just scored a goal or got a point in the game.
It's your black and white thinking.
It's that black and white thinking.
I'll cover all my bases.
At my old office, we had a pool table and we would get into so many arguments about, does that count as a shot? Was that a scratch? That I went and printed out the rules.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, we can't all play with your all different versions of rules. Here's the rules.
I have to go back to the story though. So he's explaining the rules and I'm getting more and more annoyed. As you know, it turns into 40 minutes. So I think this guy is no fun at all.
He couldn't be wrong.
I know. It's like the opposite of Doug. And he thinks I am a very mean person. Yeah. Specific name out there that I won't say. And so we leave that night like,
not interested in each other.
Zero. Yeah. Like, I have no desire to meet you again. On both ends.
Yeah.
And then it was the summer in between this ministry school year. So most people leave and it's just like a few small group of BSSM students still here. And Doug ended up being one of those sticking around and I did too. So we just kept running into each other all over the place.
Yep. And then what initially attracted me to you?
Not his love for rules. We got that down.
No. My dislike of rules and games was he met me at the lake and saw me in a bathing suit and decided, oh, maybe she's not so mean after all.
For the record, many men start with the physical.
It's true. It's true. I could walk this out. I could get to know her better.
Let's walk it out and see where this goes.
So surprisingly, you started showing up in my world a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
You're like, are you going to wear that bikini again?
we were always doing water adventures in Reading when it's 145 degrees.
You're like, yes. You're like,
you want to go to the lake again? Nicer and nicer.
No, but no. Honestly, no. What initially attracted me to her, after that initial attraction, what then started to grow is, as you guys see, like, she's a very competent person. Mm-hmm. She's very self-aware. And honestly, the more I got to know her, I was like, I'm not going to win. She's like, I'm shooting way high. I was like, compared to the previous girls that I had dated. If you're listening to this podcast,
oh my God.
Shouldn't everybody feel that way?
Right.
About who they chose as a spouse.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think you should.
Yeah.
She won. She was better than all of you. And it was, I've lost my train of thought.
What did you niche? Her competency?
Oh, her competency.
You were shooting high.
Yeah, I was shooting high. Her love for travel, her love of the world. We just all of a sudden started to find all the things where I'm like, oh, she would call me out on stuff. She would make sure that we were, she was really straight with me about what she was feeling and what was going on. And then she had really good boundaries for herself. And then probably one of the most attractive things that you don't realize until you're in it is that how well she did other relationships.
Yeah.
So like one of the biggest pieces of advice is that we give to young students that are trying to find a spouse and all that stuff. I'm like, see who they have around them. Because if they have no one around them and you guys are spending 100% of your time together, red flag.
Yeah.
And I was that person. And I was like, oh, she doesn't need to be around me all the time. She's actually got other relationships that she's pouring into. And then the way those people would talk about her, I was like, man, she's incredible.
Mm.
And then I had to win her over, which I'm good at. I'm a woo. So.
He is a woo.
What about you, Katrina?
I think he started to win me over because he was always there. No, I'm just kidding.
Persistence, guys. Stockholm
syndrome. It pays off. No, genuinely, he was so intentional and he asked a lot of questions and he was really patient. Like I was in an interesting season of life when we did meet and he was very patient with me in that season of life, very willing to walk the road with me and not pushy. And I think like I always remember in our wedding vows, I said that you weren't the man that stole my heart. You were the man that intentionally pursued every part of my heart and like got to win it instead of like trying to just come in. And so for me, it wasn't a fireworks moment or anything like that. It was just like, oh, this person, one, Doug is kind. He's one of the most kind men I've ever met. Mm-hmm. And he is hardworking and he is consistent. And I thought those are really like beautiful traits in a man and he has good character. And there's just a lot of things that were happening that I watched in him, how he loved the people around him as well. He did have good connections in his life, good relationships that he was pursuing and managing. And I was just like, oh, this is a good man.
Yeah.
At the core of who Doug is, he's good. Whether he believes it or not.
Oh. Right.
No, one of my favorite things you've said about me when you're telling other, well, again, like sometimes we help with pre-marriage class. Oh, you guys helped with that too.
Yeah.
We were all helping in pre-marriage class. Or when we take mission trips and we'd have a bunch of younger students and they'd be like, what did you love about Doug and all this stuff? And she would say, or she's like, you have to understand that no one is perfect. Mm-hmm. But I could look at Doug and say, he's going to work it out. Like if something comes up,
so good.
He will
always pursue the heart of God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I knew about him from the day one. It's just like he loved God. And I think a person that like loves God, sorry, Jenna, why are you laughing?
I was giggling about some stories about Doug loving God so zealously at 19.
Oh, so zealously. I've literally said if I met him in our first or second year of ministry school, we probably wouldn't be married.
Yeah.
He had so much growth, though.
He had so much growth. It's beautiful. But he loved the Lord, and that was a really big deal for me and is still a very big deal for me. And I think a person that is intentionally putting the Lord first and pursuing relationship with him will work it out. Like, God doesn't let you stay where you're at. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, if you know God and you're letting him have input in your life, he's not going to let you stay there. So.
Yeah, true. It's good.
It's cool because you guys are just very different. And I think I've seen often, like when there's a really strong dominant woman, either squish the man or the man like not show up, like use it as a free pass. But you guys have really, I feel like you've used each other's strength as a greenhouse to grow those areas in your own life, not as an excuse to become more you know, like in your dysfunction or strength, you've actually like used it. I feel like you guys have become better and versions of yourself in the healthiest way and not codependent. Actually, like, no, we're both going to get stronger. I really, really like your, it's been fun. Even like at the carpool, seeing each other so regularly, so much communication. I, more than any other couple, we communicate with y'all on a regular basis, even if it's logistic. And it's fun being like, oh, like I really like who you are together.
Oh, thank you.
One compliment for my wife.
Just one.
As I thought about it, one for right now, another for later. We were talking about this the other night. Jordan Peterson was breaking down this Bible verse about the meek shall inherit the earth, and that meekness is not weakness. Meekness is vulnerability. It's actually having strength withheld. And so meekness is his interpretation of it's like, I got a really big sword and I know how to use it, but I'm going to put it away. And Katrina has done that excellently throughout our entire marriage, is that she has the ability, if she wanted to come in and swing a big sword, and be like, I'm going to take control of the situation. We're doing what I say. Shut up and let's go. But consistent. Well, I mean, you have that in you if you wanted to pull that out.
Right.
Thank you.
I've seen her take it out on like United telemarketer people. Like trying to get our miles figured out and stuff.
Good memories there.
But consistently in our marriage, she's taken that control sword, that strength that she has, and put it away. And that's kind of what drove this last season of health for us, was she said, I am not going to control things anymore. I'm going to stop with her anxious attachment.
I'm not going to pursue connection.
I'm not going to pursue connection. Or I'm not going to initiate connection. Okay. I'm going to let you initiate.
Yeah.
And if you don't, we won't be connected. And I was like,
because it was giving away control. It wasn't, you weren't punishing him.
No, it was like, I'm going to actually trust that you can figure this out.
It was
out.
Like a moment of surrender for you.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And hard to do. Because you're just like, oh,
you can fix your own problems. And you're choosing not to.
I'm going to sit over here and be in pain while you don't realize that you're in pain yet.
But she's done that really well in multiple moments throughout our marriage.
That's so sweet.
So advice. This is advice for anyone out there who has control problems.
No.
Maybe not.
No, that is a good distinction with the withdrawing from initiating connection, because I withdraw from initiating connection.
And it's straight up punishment.
And you in trouble.
It is not surrender. This is me running.
Bye.
Okay. Now.
Okay.
Would you all tell us one of your awkward sex stories? Or just an unsexy sex story.
We have kids, so there's a lot of those. Okay.
We know Doug does not mind at all.
Not at all.
It wasn't even a podcast to tell him.
He's got like 10.
Which one can I say?
Am I allowed to say that one?
And I'm like feeling for the leg pushing me.
Like, stop. I feel like all sevens get the kick under the table all the time. Aaron's like, stop. No, shut up. I'm like, oh, okay.
You can have a better. You can have like a safe word. Bananas. I don't know. That might be a little weird.
Too sexual. You have to think of something
totally. Think of a less sexy fruit.
Mashed potatoes.
Star fruit.
Star fruit. Less sexy? I don't know. Okay, so we were deciding. We decided one night we're going to have sex. And so we're, you know, warming up. Things are happening. And we keep hearing a noise.
Like
and
a scratching. Like
there's something. What is that? Is that like an animal? Oh, perfect. Thank you. Is there an animal outside? Like, is there somebody at the door? Like, what is happening?
And I would stop. We kept stopping. And I'd get up and go look around. I'm like, what's going on? And then we'd come back and start warming up again. And
So finally, I'm like, Doug, there is something. Either a kid is out of bed, something's happening. And we hear, I should back up. Doug is literally about to enter. And we hear coming from under the bed.
Yeah. And our daughter is under our bed.
What?
Yeah. Daughter's under our bed.
To know Chris is to like make the story so much better.
Our daughter is wild. She gets into everything. Yeah. She's the most fun human in the world. She's
so curious.
Unlike most of your other sex stories that I've heard on this podcast, this did not end in sex. No, this ended in like, I'm frustrated. I feel violated. I'm like, Ugh, my privacy.
Okay, so what happened when you got her out of the bed? Like,
put her again, back to bed. opposite reactions though, right? Yeah. Like, you'd think that was me. I am dying laughing, and Doug comes back furious. He's like, what is happening? And I'm like, we can still have sex. He's like, no, I'm done. I can't do it.
I don't know why it got me so bad, but I was like,
Did she have any questions? Like,
no,
did
she?
She was under the bed the whole time. No. So I think she didn't understand. Oh, thankfully, didn't see anything, but genuinely was like,
we're not dirty talkers,
under there. So I'm guys at least 10 to 15 minutes. Gosh. Just hiding under the bed.
The knowledge of that would shut it down.
It shut it down for me, which I was surprised. I was like, I don't want to do this.
No, because when Jenna says sometimes she'll think about how I am like good with the kids, and that like helps her mentally be attracted to me.
It's so
I get
attractive.
In a mood. I'm like, think about when I played them that bedtime song.
And she told me that, and I was like, oh, that is so gross.
It's like that SNL skit with
That was funny.
But
that's so funny that I didn't know you actually thought it was gross.
Yeah, well, anytime, like bringing our kids anywhere into our sex life in any kind of context is like just a mood killer for me.
Do you ever start sex with like talking? Like you're making out and you keep talking about like things. Oh man, this was so cute. This other time this thing happened.
The kids or Jenna us?
Does. You're talking about stuff. Oh, yeah, just talking about life.
Oh, Aaron and does then not you're like it when I do that. Okay. I tried to learn.
We do it all the time. Yes.
And then like, at a certain,
it's a little update on life during sex.
At a certain point, you're just talking about how cute your kids are, but you're naked next to each other and you're like, we should stop. This is weird. This feels weird.
Nope, I do agree with you though. Like them playing husbands, playing with the kids and interacting with them and building connection with them is very sexy. I tell Doug that all the time because he's like, what turned you on? I'm like, you playing with the kids. It's great. Go play with
them. I think there's something to like, makes me respect him.
Yeah.
And when I increase my respect, I'm more attracted to you as well. Oh, actually really cute. Aaron the other day came home like last month and he was like, yep, I just signed up to be a volunteer for the rest of the year in Audrey's class for library day. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I saw an email. And I was like, I don't know any other man that would do that. Like, I was so excited. So like, let's go over the bedroom right now. Actually, I don't think you've cashed in on library sex. You gotta take that coupon to the bank.
Ooh, librarian. Oh, yes. Oh,
you heard something totally different than what I just said, sir.
I've got 10 overdue books and I can't pay the fine.
Oh, that was funny. Thanks, guys.
Oh, that was a good note to end on. All right. Love you guys a lot.
Love you.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for having us.
So after hearing that, if you want to know the Lord Jesus Christ as your Savior, and I've never given an altar call before. I wanted to try it out. Low risk. I can't tell if anyone raised their hand.
Wow, I'm sure there's gonna
I think I got one out in Minnesota.
Trigger some people. Yep, I see your hand in the back there. I see it.
Thank you, Minnesota. Thanks you for your commitment.
That was the weirdest way to jump back in.
Sometimes I just go for weird, not wit, just weird.
Okay, so
on that note,
there. What I appreciate about what they shared was that they are. And this was even a point of, like, not tension, but kind of when we first asked them if they would be on. It was like, hey, we're not done. We're not, like, we haven't gotten to the other side of this particular issue. And what I enjoyed about that.
They couldn't offer, like, packaged I don't have advice with a bow. Them. Yeah, like, there you go. Here's your answers. You're welcome.
Here's how you get through it. But what I thought was just really revealing was, one, their willingness to... their desire to stay connected in the middle of it, their willingness to not do it alone, and to actually like point themselves towards it. So if they, when Katrina recognized, hey, there's an issue, it's not even a divorce worthy issue, because that was never on the table for her or even a consideration, but it was misery worthy. Like, I just, this is really painful, and I think it's going to cause more and more disconnection as we go forward if this doesn't get resolved. So
I like what she said, like, we'd spent the first 10 years living like this. We don't want to spend the next 10 years.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's good.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's true. That's true for, I think, probably every couple. For us, it may not be as big as what they experienced, but there's been different things where we're like, we need to figure this part out. Like, you
even
know,
the hobbies, hence why we started the podcast. Yeah. Like,
yes, exactly.
It was interesting.
So we will have to do this for the rest of the course.
For the next 10 years.
No, so I appreciate their willingness to share it, their willingness to not do it alone and to reach out for help. And and be able to just like dive into it and do normal life at the same time. Like, hey, this is a big deal to us, but we're still gonna stay connected in the middle of it. And
sometimes I think that's harder. It's easy. It feels more raw and vulnerable when you haven't sorted it. Like, you have to choose.
That's true.
Hope. And even talking about it, like, it does feel easier to talk about. It feels less vulnerable, even if it's like vulnerable information, because it's not raw and current. It's like when it's in the past, it's just not as fresh.
Yeah. I think, yeah, that's a really good distinction. And if there's shame around something in the past, that's when it gets vulnerable to share it. Like, if you feel ashamed and you still share it. But a lot of times, the things that we've worked through, it's not really vulnerable for us to share, like, some of the failures in the past that don't have the shame anymore, that we have, like, and here's how you do it, and here's the wisdom around it. But it's super vulnerable to go, I do not have this figured out, and it's a little scary, and it's very hard, but here's what we're doing. But I thought it was crazy valuable anyways, you know?
100%. It's interesting, because I think even a lot of times, like, leaders share post...
Yeah.
I was going to say postpartum, but, like, post-process information. And I think... Honestly, I think that's one of the things you're gifted at. Like, when you speak, people always talk about your vulnerability. And I think it's more that you're mid process and willing to, like, open up where you're at and the mess versus here, it's done. I'm neat and tidy now.
Yeah. And that's always the tension with being a leader in any sense, because Doug and Katrina are leaders, like, in our environment in different areas. And the tension for me running, doing the men's group is... the idea that, like, man, guys need to know that there's hope that you can, I think this was what I went into men's group going, I need to know that there's hope that you can arrive. Like, you can arrive at, in my mind, I wouldn't have said this because it's dumb to articulate and I know it's not true, but you would arrive at perfection. Like, I no longer, for me, you know, I no longer want to look at porn. I have no desire to sexually act out in any way. You know, and yada, 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 all the ideas of quote unquote freedom that I had. And then if I had a leader who failed, you know, cause we've had leaders all around the country who have failed. And then it's like, man, can we trust anything they said? And that was always my fear, is like, if I screw up as a leader, does that negate the wisdom that I have or what I have brought to people? But what I found in that process was, one, I decided a long time ago, even being a small group leader or helping lead the group, if I'm not there to get better still, then there's no point. Like, as a leader, if I fail in some way, I need to share that with my guys. I need to be open about it, because looking good to them is going to kill me in the future. I've seen that enough from leaders that have fallen. So, you know, whatever consequences be damned, in the sense that if, you know,
someone thinks less of you.
Yeah, someone thinks less of me, or people want me to step down, you know, because they're like, my leader's not good enough. That's the fear, is that they're going to go, oh, you're not actually good enough. And so, but...
I think, too, like, there are consequences to stumbles.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there are consequences. But that's... I had to get to the place where I'm like, it's so worth me getting better to, like, face any possible consequences that I'm going to be open about it. But what I've found is how much the guys, after I talk to them, after I've shared stuff like failures, even being a leader, how much they appreciate. They're like, oh, okay, so it is possible to be as awesome as you are and still fail. One, that is just feels good to know that they're like, I haven't arrived at perfect, and I guess you haven't either. And that gives some space to
Be in process. And
yeah, to be in process.
I think, one, when you say fail, I think it'd be a shame to limit it. We're not talking about, like, just looking at pornography. It's so much bigger. It's like yelling at your kids. It's like how you handled all me. It, so, like, yeah. I think that idea, I just wanted to clarify.
That's
but
good.
Then, two, I was, as you were saying, like, having arrived. And as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, that means we stopped growing.
Yeah.
And I was like, we've said we want to. I think I realized I had a similar mindset where I'm like, oh yeah, like, and when I get better at being a friend or not disappointing people or being responsible, I'll have arrived. But I was like, oh, I actually have another core value of never stop growing.
Yeah.
Just realizing the tensions of the two, but it almost takes pressure off.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, I get to keep growing.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm not missing the mark.
So we need leaders who who never arrive because they're always willing to grow more. And I even tell my leaders, hey, your guys, like, you're going to fail at some point in some way. Your guys need to see you fail, and they need to see you fail well, because success is not never failing. Mm-hmm. Success is failing really well and getting better every time afterwards. And that is what I think is helpful to see a leader that, oh, my leader's still in process. He's still growing. He's not perfect. He cleans up his mess. Yeah, he cleans up his messes when, and that's, I mean, we've talked about this before with parenting.
Parenting, I know. As you were saying, I was like, this is the same thing.
It doesn't matter. What's more important in parenting is repairing rupture than never causing a rupture.
And that's universally true.
For our marriage, for leadership,
friendship.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
I don't think I connected those dots before. I just thought of it as like the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks, babe.
It's good stuff.
Things are blowing my mind.
Kaboom. Love you.
Love you too.